Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Growing up in Oklahoma, my next guest, Whitney Reynolds, always knew that she wanted to have her own television show. As a child, she started interviewing her friends with a makeshift microphone in her living room. During her adolescence, her family's difficult personal journey gave her the desire to share delicate stories that must be told. At the age of 23, her childhood dream became her adult mission, and her talk show was born. Since then, her show has grown and expanded through hard work and a very caring nature that helps her connect with her guests and audience. She's a television talk show host, media personality, podcast host, author, producer, philanthropist, Emmy nominated, and a Telly Award winner. Whitney is widely known for her talk show, The Whitney Reynolds Show, a nationally syndicated talk show that airs on PBS stations all across the United States. Welcome, Whitney.
It always feels so surreal. I'm always like, wait, who are they talking about?
Right?
It's a riot. I think that's one of the parts about me that makes it really unique is that there is not a day that goes by that I'm like, wow, I can't believe we're doing this. And I don't take it for granted. So hearing that you say that, I'm like, wait, what is happening? That's so crazy.
Well, no, I totally hear you. And I kind of have the same response myself when sometimes people lay out the bio and it's like, are we letting it in? I mean, not in an egotistical way, but like, are we patting ourselves on the back for all the hard work? Right.
That's so true. And yeah. Yeah. And I don't think I definitely don't enough. My husband would say I do, but I don't think I do because I'm always so focused on like that next goal that it's mm-hmm. hard for me to always just like soak in. Wow. Mm-hmm. Good going.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I think I have a few more years on you, but and I think I've just mellowed out a little bit. I still want to, create and get my stuff out into the world, but I think maybe, I don't know. It's just a little bit of the drive. The drive isn't gone, but just maybe some of the reasons why I had the drive are not with me anymore, which makes it a little bit, just a little easier for me.
Well, and I don't want to call you out on your age. I don't know how old you are. People, I mean, mine.
I'm 55.
Darn Wikipedia. They put it out there on mine. But either way, with the age thing, one thing that I've heard from my friends, because I do not discriminate on age with friends or anything like that. I have young ones. I have older ones all across the board. But they said in your 40s, it's not that you care less, but some of the small stuff that used to rile you up is now gone. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I am so looking forward to that. I'm like, I wonder if like when I turn 40, it's just going to hit me over the head and happen, or is it going to be something I have to work on? So I'm turning 36 in April. And that is one thing I'm trying to not mellow out, but just like really enjoy the stages of life that I'm in right now, because, you'll look back and say like, oh, I wish I would have celebrated that award more, or just like, laughed in that moment of that push, so.
Well, for sure. And I can totally just, it's one thing to understand it intellectually, because I think we all do, but life is short. And I wasn't enjoying my journey as much as I should have when I was creating a lot of that stuff, because I think I was still looking outside of myself for that validation to for my own self-worthiness. And once that kind of got cleaned up a little bit, I became a little bit more self-aware, more self-accepting. I think that's probably where I've just kind of like chilled a bit.
Oh, I love that. I love that for you.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that you're not there at all, but you know what I'm saying? But it is about enjoying the journey, because there really isn't a destination. Because once sometimes we hit those, if we're so motivated to keep it going, then it's just like, where's the, where's the joy? Where's the fun? Where's the excitement? Because we're right. I mean, it's almost a letdown sometimes when we get to a goal, if we're in that mode.
Yeah, totally.
I know that, like, when I used to do the Ironman triathlons, sometimes, you know, I'd heard a lot of people didn't really struggle with it, but a lot of people got depressed after they got done because they've been training for a year, you know, and all of a sudden they did it or didn't or whatever. And it's just like, now what, you know?
You're giving me a show topic right now. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes, like, and it's about enjoying the race and understanding it. I mean, that's one thing that going national, I'd worked on it so long. I had been pushing for 10 years here in Chicago, and I got told no for years. And when we got the yes, it was the most weird, odd time. It was right when I was voiceovering in my kid's closet because COVID had just shut down Chicago. We didn't know really, we had pushed back my premiere. Cause I'm like, we'll be through this in 2 weeks. Nope. Chicago shut down. And then I get the call that we're going national. And it was just, that's what I would consider one of those God winks in my life of like, calm down, kid. I got you. And then we just had that odd time during COVID to actually prepare the launch. And so of course, like looking back on that now, I'm like, of course we launched during COVID. And of course, you know, this, because never anything really goes to plan, but it's when you least expect it that it like truly happens. And that's like, for us, I look back and I'm like, wow, what a crazy 2 years this has been, but what a life transformation this has been too.
Well, yes. Thank you for bringing that up. Oh my gosh. I mean, I think it has been for a lot of people in so many different ways. But since you touched on it, and I was going to ask you about this, share with us, a little bit about the dream that you had about creating your talk show as a little girl. And then I know you just kind of tapped into the end of it there, but take us kind of through its evolution to where it is today, because I know it did take, you know, a long time before it got picked up. And, you know, that's really says a lot about you. You know what I mean? Well, of believing in your dream and just really sticking it out for so long.
Well, it was interesting because I grew up, it's again, kind of laughable. And I'm not trying to say that kids from Oklahoma can't do what I did, but I grew up in a town where like my mom didn't even believe in cable television because, you know, it was bad. It had MTV, it had other things. So like I had to sneak to watch Jet Setters back in the day that were doing what I one day wanted to do. Mm. And I grew up in this small town and I knew from a very young age I wanted to be a talk show host. And it is really bizarre because there wasn't a day I remember of my life not knowing this dream. Mm-hmm. And it's okay not to though, because I say that I have 2 5-year-olds and they have no idea. I truly believe if I'm peeling some layers back, it probably wasn't until I was 7 that I knew, but I don't really remember too much before then of saying what I wanted to be. And my kids, they have no idea. And that's okay. There's, you know, people that become huge life-changing people that don't really decide what they want to do till after college. So, you know, the dream can ever be evolving. But for me, it was at a very young age, laid on my heart. I remember telling people in my small town, and it's now grown. We now have like a Starbucks I heard is coming in, but at the time it was around 10,000 people. And I said I was going to be the next Sally Jesse Raphael. I borrowed my mom's big red glasses. I did interviews in our living room. I would, the paper towel, the paper towel inside with a tennis ball with some tape. And that was my microphone. I would actually charge my neighbors to watch me perform. I mean, I think, you know, looking back too, because I own my own TV show now, nationally syndicated, and I'm like, oh, you know, all these little steps. Okay, yeah, I was an entrepreneur at a young age. So I always knew that was kind of the journey and it was about getting there. I also had a very challenging childhood, and it's something that I don't fully go there, not because I don't want to, but just because it impacts more people than just me. Like it's not just my story. Mm-hmm. So, but that what happened to me when I was younger really changed my trajectory as a 20-year-old. Going through being a kid, middle school and high school and college, I knew I had that dream. I was going to be a TV show host, but the best way I can describe it is being like having both your arms out and having this feeling like one side's weighing down more than the other. And I knew I wanted to do that, but I'm like, oh, if I am the level that I believe I will be, people will find out. And I had so much shame around what went into my childhood, and in a way of like, would people accept the different situations? And I say shame, like, not that I was truly embarrassed. It was more so of, will people accept how I accept what happened and what is now and what is beautiful now. So with that, I had this kind of dilemma, and I was told, you know, we keep, when I went off to college, you know, we mm-hmm. keep it hush, hush, that kind of thing. You are your own person. You can do this. And I always went about the TV journey knowing I was going to do it. I anchored the local newscast. And again, that small town is very shocking because they somehow had a local channel for the high school. It was so cool. And definitely put me on the right checkers board. You know, God dropped me right on the right checkers board. And so I did that. I was president of my high school. I knew I needed to learn how to speak and how to speak better than talking to a whole school when you're 17, 18. So did that. I competed in marketing for our state and went to New York mm-hmm. for a thing called DECA back in the day. And when I was there, I was so determined of my life journey that I had made signs just to inform Katie Couric and Diane Sawyer that, hey, I'm going to take your job one day. And I made signs that were pretty aggressive now that I go back and look at them. And it was like, hey, I'm going to be the next Katie. And, or, hey, Diane, bring me up. I want to interview you. Like, those were my signs I made. And so I went to New York to compete for this competition. And when we were there, again, it's this right time, right place. And truly, I know people call it different things, but I say, knowing, when I look back on my life, there are God appointments, and this was one of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people call it putting out in the universe, whatever you want to call it. But mm-hmm. for me, this is a God appointment. And we were in an elevator, and there was a guy with a camera. And I said to him, I was like, hey, that's a camera. And, you know, this is back in the day when, when people had like basically a boat of a camera. And he's like, oh yeah, this is a camera. All right. And I said, what do you do? And he said, actually, I was shooting something for Good Morning America. And I said, well, that's crazy, because I am actually coming to Good Morning America with my signs this week. And he said, well, let me know. I'll get you in. What day? So again, I was probably 14 or 15 at the time. And I was in New York, and I woke up my sponsor that morning, and I said, hey, are you ready to go? Because everyone was really jazzed that this, you know, interaction happened in the elevator. And she handed me a 20 and said, take a taxi. So I took a taxi all by myself with my sign. And I stood outside. I wanted to get in. I hollered like, hey, it's me. It's me. And the intern working the door said, you know what, lady, you're not on the list. You know, take a hike or have your sign outside. And luckily I was wearing an obnoxious enough cowboy hat with, like, it was black and white. It looked like cow spots. And I had this lime green sign that the guy from the elevator saw me and had me come on in. And I got to kind of live the dream that day and see it firsthand. And really my Oklahoma brain really expanded that day to levels of seeing, of like, not just dreaming, but seeing it and seeing a tangible thing I could do. And I was in the studio afterwards, you know, just trying to, you know, get an extra hug and picture with my 35 millimeter camera with Diane Sawyer. And the intern came up, and he didn't necessarily apologize, but more so like, hey, I'm sorry. You know, this is the thing they assigned me. I'm in college and I'm supposed to take care of the door. And I said, well, tell me about yourself. I've always been one very intrigued with people. Mm. And he told me he was an intern from Baylor University. And I said, well, I'll be darned. I'm from Oklahoma, the bordering state to Texas. I said, we should keep up via email. And we exchanged emails. And over the course of 4 years, I then got accepted into Baylor. I graduated early, and he hand walked my resume in, and I landed an internship at Good Morning America.
Wow. And
yes, it was one of the neatest. I still keep up with him today. He's one of my TV angels. Mm-hmm. And that whole experience was, again, a God appointment. And the really funny thing about full circle is one of the guys that I met at Good Morning America when I was in high school, he still works at GMA, and he also does music. He's partnered with a music company, and his music company just created my new show, Open. So,
oh my gosh.
Very, very, very full circle. But so again, at Good Morning America, I was still chasing the dream. And that was one of those moments of like, okay, this doesn't accidentally happen to people. Like, I don't know how many, and I look, so many moments in my life are like that. Of like, that just does not accidentally happen where you're in an elevator. So fast forward, I land a morning anchor job. Yeah. I learned to talk on TV for 2 hours. People, you know, they kind of chuckled when I said talk show host, like even in college, because it's so far and few between. I mean, now we have podcasts and everything, but back in the day, the idea of having, being, you know, Sally Jesse Raphael or Jenny Jones, there was only so many spots, or Oprah, you know, there were only so many spots, and those shows were well taken, and taken in ways that, you know, they even had their successors ready to go with, like Ellen. So it was still kind of one of those, you just don't own a talk show kind of thing. It was kind of like this pat on the back, like good luck, kid. And so I did the news route. The closest thing to being a talk show host was a morning anchor, because I got to do this like fun animal segment. I got to do a talk back with the radio host, and people got to see my personality a little bit more, but it also media trained me in a way that I needed to be, because I still go in and teleprompter for PBS stations, and I need to know all the back end. And luckily that taught me how to do that. Mm-hmm. But I did that for about a year, and then I moved to Chicago, and it was right during the recession. And the job that I thought would work out definitely did not work out. It was like a very, very closed door. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was here, and I'm scratching my head of like, what to do? What do I do? I just left what some would say it was a dream job, because my parents could watch me. It was in Texas and Oklahoma. I could live in Dallas. Like, it was really nice. And I was here kind of just kicking my heels. And I knew I needed to make money, and I ended up selling shoes. And what's a very interesting point about selling shoes is it was one of the most humbling experiences of my life, because this was pre-COVID. So this is when you could actually like interact and not necessarily touch people, but the rule was you take the two boxes of shoes, you recommend a third, but you help them put it on.
Yeah.
And think about this. Feet are the one thing that now in life I would love to avoid. I don't even like seeing people's feet on airplanes. If you take off your shoes on the airplane, I'm like, oh, come on. But in this moment, it was one of, I have to say, the most humbling experiences that reminds me, like, we are all human. It doesn't, and I got talked down to many times in that shoe store. And, you know, here I just left what I thought was my dream job. Mm. And I remember a couple of times when I was working in downtown, Chicago doing the shoes, because I rotated to different stores, which was kind of fun because I got to learn the city. But I saw one of my TV friends, which is now still one of my TV friends, but I went out and talked to him back then. And that's one of his favorite memories of me today. He's like, remember when I met you and you were selling shoes? And I was like, oh yes. Oh yes, I do. And so I sold shoes for a little bit, and then I landed an anchor job again, and I had them right in my claws. I said, hey, if Weekends with Whitney is what I called it at the time. If Weekends with Whitney picks up, which was this little Facebook, like, hello, I'm Whitney. I would do like fun little Facebook segments. Mm-hmm. It's picked up. I have an out. And they were like, okay, okay. So I had done the anchor thing for a few months, and to make extra money, because again, I've been very entrepreneurial minded my whole life. Yeah. I also did real estate videos, and I was in this woman's house that said, hey, I work for NBC. Come down, pitch us your show, which is again, another God appointment. Okay. Hello. So ended up pitching NBC my show, which was at the time just an online around the town iPhone, maybe early iPhone, nothing fancy at all.
What year is this about?
This was, I'd have to look at the exact year. I know it had to be when I was 23 or 24. Okay. So I don't know. I'm not really the best at math.
2010-ish.
Yes, exactly. Maybe 11, probably. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I went down to NBC, and they said, if you can own your show, you can do it. And I went back to the drawing board. I found a station that was a public, not PBS, but public television. It's actually like a real public television. There's very few of those left in the United States. And it's truly sad, because that was one of my launching pads.
But can I ask you a quick question? What does own your show mean, like in a situation like where you're at right there, at that part in your career?
I had no idea. It meant like go home and make as many phone calls as you can. And
does that mean like do the whole thing, produce it yourself, and then have the show ready to give to them?
Yeah, start to finish, late at the beginning. And the only thing at that time, it didn't have to be closed caption, actually. And that was huge, because of it. That might have been the
little too many. Yeah.
I went back to the drawing board. I found a public TV station, and I started shooting it, hosting it, got my E&O insurance for the show, and started having Weekends with Whitney being around the town show. And it grew so fast.
Wow.
So fast. And it was in Chicago that we were doing things that I would have never done. I started interviewing celebrities. I started jumping out of planes on TV. I had this amazing crew. And actually the crew two of the team members that started with me are still on my staff today. And yeah, they're my director, still my director, and my supervising producer, still my supervising producer. And they believed in me when I couldn't even really pay them. It was a labor of love. And so I did the NBC thing for about a year and a half. And that's when it happened. And that's when that the hands separated, this the weights on each side, like how do I live in one world without the other, really collided. And I just, if you can picture someone's arms out, that's when I just dropped them. And I'm like, okay, I did not be handed this deck of cards that I call my childhood and the challenging stuff I had. And I'm just not accidentally hosting a show in Chicago on NBC. That I am truly called for more.
You made it happen.
Being this dumbfounded, like, how did I not connect these dots years ago? But it's right place, right time, right moment. And I really knew that I had to do something more. And it became such a strong just conviction in my soul of I now know what I'm called to do. The dream is no longer a dream. It is now a mission. I need to create the show that I needed as a kid. I need people to know they are going to be okay in those difficult situations, that they can own their story and that they can be proud of the difficult moments because it's leading them to where they're going. And that's when I created the Whitney Reynolds Show. I knew I needed to switch networks because I was told very point blank, your show is not sexy enough. And it wasn't anything that really was trying to be hurtful. It was more so like at the time, people really didn't care about hope. They cared about like, what sushi are you eating on air? They really didn't care to like see the mother that survived domestic violence. I wanted to tell the good. And that is such a backwards narrative for a lot of things we see on TV, but I knew that's what I needed to do. And that's the ironic part of getting picked up in COVID is it was the time the world needed hope the most.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, go for it.
So, and we'll get back to what we'll continue with what you're doing in there, but so I know that, you know, your show is dedicated to being a safe space for a lot of delicate life stories. Do you think that, I mean, has that been healing for you with what you went through as a child? Is that one of the reasons why you kind of really feel strongly an impulse to share those stories and to give people hope that have gone through tough times?
Oh, absolutely. You're nailing it exactly on the head. In fact, if my bio could read, you know, welcome to the safe space for all. Longer tables are designed here. There's a chair for you to pull up and be seen and be heard. That's what would be there, because there is the healing part of it for me. The healing had happened over the years. Again, my life, I look back now and I'm embarrassed that I was ever embarrassed about it because I'm like, no, Whit, that is what makes you, you. Again, it just impacts more people than me. And that's what I've had to realize is, you know, eventually there'll be the right time and place, but what it really means is I want people to know that they are seen, they are heard, and that their story does matter. Yeah. And if I can give people that little glimmer of, I can get through this and I can make the world a better place through what I've gone through, then we're all winning.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's fantastic. So, I mean, I can totally see, I mean, just this whole picture that you're painting of from when you were a little girl and all these different little, as you call them, God winks or God appointments or connections. I mean, you're obviously, your intuition, your guidance is driving the bus, but yet I think because you're so in alignment with what you want to do, all these magical synchronistic events are happening that just kind of keep either preparing you for what's to come or to make connections for you to get to where you eventually want to be.
You nailed it on the head with preparing, because there are times, and I am not a very patient person. There are times that I'm like, hey, why is the national thing not working out yet? Oh no, it was because I needed to become a mom. I needed to be with my babies for that little bit. I needed that sponsor to leave me when I had babies because they were like, oh, we're worried you're not going to be the same person on TV that you were pre-kids. I needed all those things to happen because one, it lit more of a fire under me. It also gave me time with my beautiful family. It also made me love what I do even more. When I went back stronger, but at the same time, it's like, I forget that these moments are preparation. And if we can do separation of the no's into it's not now. And I always hate whenever sponsors tell me that, because I'm like, well, not now doesn't pay the bills. but with that, if we can kind of switch the narrative in our own mind of the no's are preparing us for something more, or helping us get that muscle a little stronger for how we push through the next no, or become more gracious with the next yes.
Absolutely. And as well as maybe a fine tune.
Yeah, totally.
Nice. Well, okay. So when did it really start to take shape like it is now? I mean, the last couple of years?
So just to catch where we were, just a high level overview. The night before I pitched PBS, I met my husband for our first walk. I had met him at a coffee shop. And so it was really neat, because sometimes, you know, when people get to where they're going, they find, you know, people and they didn't really know who they were. And David, my husband, has known me every inch of this. And it's really been cool to see us grow this together. And mm-hmm. he is such a different side of the business of it, which is really cool, because everything I do is very personal, because it's like the mission. And so it's been really nice to have someone else like walk alongside me, and he's able to develop the business side, because with PBS, I still owned the show. And so nothing switched on that side. So it was the same type model, but just on a bigger level. And then again, I was doing this and kind of honing the skills, honing, you know, how do I become a better host? And I'm still learning. Every season we implement new things, including like this upcoming season is my best yet, because you will see package pieces like you've never seen before on my show, with celebrities that are, you know, really opening up about the hope they found in their difficult moments, which is a cool thing to do, to hear from a celebrity, because you know, sometimes they don't always go there. But the show then in 2020 got picked up for 2021. And now we just grow it every year. Like, it's solidifying better time slots. It's more playbacks. It's you name it. I just got picked up by Tubi, which is, it's a great streaming network that basically what I love about Tubi is you don't have to download an app. It's coming on all TVs. Like, so it's really easy for people to access our show. I mean, I still recommend people download the PBS app. They download, you know, YouTube TV. Because YouTube TV has been transformational too, but Tubi picking us up was a really big win, because people that are buying these new TVs have access to the Whitney Reynolds Show day one, which is really cool. So, now it's just been about growing it. And there's bigger dreams. There's big things that I know. I'm 35 now. So I want to do this for the rest of my life. People ask me that a lot. They're like, well, what do you want to do like next? And I'm like, just this, but become the household name for hope. When people think about their story, I want them to think, hey, I'm in either a learning curve, I'm in a moment where I'm going to launch into bigger things, or I'm going to stand on the top of the mountain and reach my arm back and help another person up. And I want them to think of our show when they think of that. And if they need to be inspired, tune in to more episodes.
I really love those three things that you said, that you, as your outlook for the show, you know, going forward. I mean, those are just, that's such a healthy way to look at it without really kind of putting a lot of added pressure on yourself, right? I mean, there's no matter what happens, those are all three positive outcomes.
Absolutely. Well, and the national thing, like I told my staff, when that happened, and I had to make some very tough decisions on the national thing. I'm still in a huge learning curve with it, from the business side to deadlines. We now have an all-staff calendar that if you look, there are red burning deadlines that are every year, and then like daytime Emmys. Those are now in our calendar. I've never competed in the daytime Emmys. I've always competed in the local Emmys. So there's now all these like learning curve moments that have happened. But I told my staff, I'm like, you go national once. We don't go back. We never go back. Mm. We are now a national show, and we need to stay the best in our lane to what we, and what is our best? The best is the best that we produce. Mm-hmm. It's not the other show to our left or to our right. The best is what we can do. And how do we do that? And how do we reach more people each season? So that's what we're doing.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I hadn't mentioned it yet, but we met on your show. It was a pleasure of mine to be a guest
on
your show.
You actually came into my living room.
I came to Chicago and we did it. I met your crew and had a really nice time. That was very, very,
now,
very
let
nice
me tell
experience.
You, let me tell you something very funny about that. What? So I moved, this is actually really funny. And, but I was like, I joke that I was ahead of COVID because we moved to our, to a new home that has a building out back that I was like, I'm turning that into a studio because prior I'd taped it in my living room. And I called the city to pull permits for this building out back. And they're like, absolutely not. It is zoned residential. And I'm like, wait, zoned residential? What do you mean? And so I call one of my friends who's a commissioner and she's like, oh yeah, I knew that. And I knew you weren't doing it. And I'm like, what? She's like, you know, I thought you're breaking the rules. But it's funny because COVID has changed so much that now whenever I say I taped in my home, people are like, yeah, who hasn't? But back in the day, I had to make a decision when I had the twins, like, okay, how do I make this sustainable at this moment in time? And so we turned my house into a studio and we taped in there, and which is such a riot to me now, because I can't imagine doing that again. Cause now we do have a dedicated space where we turn it on the lights, we turn on the audio. It's all my stuff. But for the people that were the OGs sitting on my set in my living room.
But I mean, it worked. It looked great. I mean, it was perfect. It was fine.
Yeah,
it,
you know, that's right. And, you know, and that's, again, owning your story. You know, sometimes when we're too big for our britches and we want to pretend that things aren't the way. I mean, like, those are the stories. That's probably one of those moments in time that I will always look back and salute myself and be like, heck yeah, Whit, opened up your house.
What makes a good interviewer?
I think it truly is listening and not being ready for the next question. And that is something that I still have to work on, but it's actually truly listening. And we do that a lot when, and you might remember this, when we mic people, I will talk about what people have for breakfast. I will talk about their great aunts. Like, we will not talk about what they're there for, because there is something beautiful that happens when the camera starts rolling and I start listening. Questions that I had originally are thrown out and I'm like, oh wow, we're going there. Now, another thing with the interview is having your, what I call your amazing top three things that you know are going to pivot the interview the way you want it to go. I call it like driving the bus. So I always have those in mind. Like, you have to have those three stops, but for the most part, listening, because I look back on younger videos of myself and I'm like, oh yeah. And then, and I go right into the next question. Whereas like, they just said, like, they were battling something huge. And I'm like, and then I could have gone into like, how did you get through that moment? But, and that's just one of those things over time. And I really, really encourage people that have a platform of where they are interviewing to go back and watch themselves, because you'll learn a lot just from watching what you're doing right now.
No, that's a great piece of advice. Absolutely. I found myself getting better too. I it really is about listening and just, and it's not about early on, maybe when I did it, there's a part of me that unfortunately kind of tried to make it about me a little bit, right? You know, but it's not about us. It's about just making our guest feel comfortable to open up, right? And just listen and just intuitively go with the flow.
Yes. And that was one thing that PBS told me, the station that originally picked us up here in Chicago, they told me, they named the show, the Whitney Reynolds Show. I did not name it that. I wanted it like Topics Today. They named it that. And then they also said, it's not about you. And I was like, well, excuse me, like, you named the show, the Whitney Reynolds Show. Like, I wasn't the one saying it here. And what they said is they explained it the way I said it a minute ago. I'm the driver of the interview. I am just driving. And it is really the stories that need to unfold as the passenger. And that's one thing I've learned. And then as the show has grown, I don't have to critique near as much because people do it on Twitter to me all day. Okay. So, yeah.
Is that hard at first? Yeah. Getting negative reviews?
Yeah. I mean, the worst is like when it's something you can't really fix, when it's just the way your eyes are. Oh, God. You're like, well, that's just me. You know, that is not makeup under my eye. That is what we call a freckle, folks. So, you know, that's kind of the feedback, like the superficial feedback. But there are some points where people like actually have written in that they were mad that I didn't listen better. And it was, and it's, it's an interesting position when you own the show and you host it, because you have to be the person that sees that and understands how to actually understand how that viewer felt. Like, normally, if you think about news, you have talent and you have a news director. So the news director would come in and say like, hey, you know, cream cheese, you're not doing like, you're undermining guests when they call in or something. But when you're the host and the owner, you have to really listen to the feedback you get and have to weigh it out of like, hey, is that like something I'm really doing? Am I not listening? And I remember it was tough at first, but in order to be in this for the long game, I have to look at it for what it is and make corrections if it is something I can change for the betterment of the show.
Yeah. Wow. No, that's very interesting. What advice would you give to someone just starting out who wants to have their own show or podcast?
I would understand your why. And people did that for me. They said that to me all the time. Like, what is your hook? What is your why? What is your, and if, to be completely frank, I didn't know it for a long time. It wasn't really until I was in my 20s.
Sometimes it takes a while, right? I mean,
yeah, it can. And I would say, if you can start the journey for yourself, like if you're doing it or the stream's been put on your heart, try to understand why, and whether that is like doing a walk where you listen to music that inspires you, or, you know, doing a vision board, like what actually sparks your thing. Maybe that will help you get there. Like, again, it's your own journey, but trying to start that journey sooner for people will be a big feather in your cap as you continue to grow it, because then that why becomes more so of your understanding to your whole purpose.
Yes. And I think, and I'm just learning this myself, I think it makes it easier to market it, to, you know, really have that energy behind it of like, this is what it's about. And it allows people to kind of buy in and understand it a little bit better. Cause sometimes when they're not sure, they're not connected to it as much.
Totally. You are so right with that. And then when you can connect to it, then other people can connect, and it's like,
yes,
Legos, and
then you can start building. Yes.
Nice. Do you love my 5-year-old analogies? You can tell I have twins that are 5. It's like Legos.
Oh no, it's perfect. It's life. You've interviewed thousands of people. What is the connecting piece that you feel like links this all together? You know,
Well, when people come on the show, they know they're on a topic-based show. Mm-hmm. A big thing that I've realized, and this is an interesting, and I don't think I've touched on this too much on any kind of type of platform, is when you are in my position, I never consider myself an actress, but there is some acting that goes into it, because you have to immediately read the personality that you're interviewing and become their friend. And not necessarily like a fake way, but where they trust you. And the cool thing with our show, now we're becoming a trusted voice in the sense of like, people know, like I've never had this happen, but if someone said, I don't want that interview to run because I said something bad about my mother or something, we would not run it. Like, that is my stamp of approval, is I never want anybody to regret what they would ever say on my show. Yeah. So we are a trusted voice in that, but reading my interview. So like, I do the podcast Pop and Positivity, and we're interviewing major artists that are basically, some of them don't even know how famous they are about to be. I just interviewed Gayle, the ABCDEFU song, which is a very interesting song. It's very catchy. It stays in your head for days, but she's 17. She doesn't even know really how famous she is. Like, when we were in Florida, we heard that song nonstop. But I had to immediately in that interview go to understanding where Gayle would want to talk to me as a friend. Whereas like, I'm talking to you as a friend now too. So it's kind of understanding who you are chatting with and being on that level with them, and not being, because I've been in the position where I've been on shows promoting my book, where I feel like small, or they want me to know it's their studio, or my narrative is in their hands. For me, it's never that way. I want them to be like, oh, I want to tell more. I want to, you know, share more. I trust this whole process. I'm comfortable here.
Well, no, that's great. I mean, and like you said, we talked about, you are dealing with a lot of potentially delicate subjects, and that's gotta be, I don't know. I don't want to say tough in its own way, in a different way, but I mean, like you said, you're having to build confidence in front, you know, a relationship with this person very quickly so that they feel comfortable to share with you. Do you ever feel uncomfortable talking about something with somebody?
The only time I've really felt uncomfortable is when I'm wearing something that I shouldn't have been. And I, sometimes when I get to the studio, they, my clothes, and this is something that's changing for this season, my clothes do not match the topic. And that's one thing I'm realizing is there is so much that goes into the pie of a show. Like,
oh wow.
I
never even thought.
Yeah, I know. It just happened this last year. I was interviewing someone on a very delicate situation and the outfit they dropped off was just the wrong. And that changed the whole mood. Like, it was so interesting to see how my mood changed based on the outfit. So that's, again, as you grow and as you learn, you understand more of what the key ingredients are. And who would ever think the outfit? But now I do think the outfit, because that's the only time I've been really uncomfortable is I had someone on for a very sensitive subject and my outfit did not match the sensitive subject because to me it was a little too risque for what they were opening up about. Mm-hmm. So that's been something. There's a lot of people that email in their stories though. And we say, we see you, we hear you. And I think in the future we'll have a resource to send them. But right now we say, if they're not over the tough part of the situation, we want them to be seen. We want them to be heard, but sometimes it's not the moment to share it on television because there has to be for our show, part of our genre is learning the lesson, getting through that. And where are you now?
So they need to have been healed a little bit, maybe to get, get to be on the show. Okay.
A little bit. I mean, we have some very raw, well, like prime example, I interviewed this mom that has now become a very dear person in my life. I actually keep up with her, which doesn't always happen with guests, but she had just lost her son and he had been multiple times by her estranged husband. And she basically was swollen still on my set because she was abused in that whole thing that ended her son's life. But she knew her mission was to tell her story, to save other lives, and already knew the plan. And in fact, like was wearing his ashes on set. And so it's not always that there's a certain timeline to the healing, mm-hmm. but there is a point that we know if we can have it on the show, because there has to be something that our viewer can learn from it and walk away feeling like, okay, I can get through this.
Well, that's very, I mean, that's brave of you to take on, you know, to work with folks that are doing that, because it's not easy, but it's so important.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is with downtime and doing the type of show we do, it is really important for me to stay completely rooted in things that make me happy, you know, things that keep me grounded. One thing I realized, I'm not a good cook, but I really enjoy cooking at night for my family. Like maybe like once a week or something, but maybe twice a week, but it brings me joy for whatever reason. And when you're doing a show that is so, like, prime example, I'm going over to Colombia at some point, the country, and I'm interviewing former terrorists.
Wow.
And to do stuff like that, you have to stay really, like, even on the seesaw of like what gives you joy. Cause you don't want to be wrapped into, like, because a lot of the stuff we do share is very hard stuff. And so it's, you know, when you're being around that, it's really important to do things that spark joy on the side and then make sure that, you know, you're stacking the show with level stuff that will inspire people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, something that we share in common and that I really like about, you know, you and what you're doing is that your work obviously is created with the mission to inspire your audience, to provoke positive change. And, well, I mean, that goes without saying with what we already discussed, but you do a lot of philanthropy work outside of your show. What are some of the programs that are important to you that you're working with?
So I work with two that I am just very passionate about. Mm-hmm. One is Dress for Success, because I was that girl that needed to borrow a suit to pitch the network. Like, when I went into NBC, I borrowed a suit from my upstairs neighbor that had one that was ironed to say I'm a powerhouse, that fit me correctly and that gave me confidence to walk in there and pitch a show and actually get a yes. And so immediately I knew when I got to where I was going, that was one of the organizations, even though Dress for Success did not supply me with that suit, that is what they do for women. They help women with their resumes now. I mean, the overflow of what they're doing is just changing the lives of women to really be able to land jobs and turn their whole life around. So I'm very passionate about Dress for Success. I've been in those shoes. I understand them. And so I'm all about that. And then I'm also part of the Service Club of Chicago. And this was an interesting charity or a nonprofit for me to join. And why I love them for many reasons is I do the radio show too. So I do a podcast and a radio show, and the radio show is dedicated to women who give back. So I work with a ton of nonprofits in the city. Like, you name a nonprofit, I've probably worked with them. I probably have fundraised for them in some way or another. But the Service Club of Chicago, what we do is we raise funds for all the nonprofits of Chicago, and then they apply for grants and we give them tangible things needed. Oh, so like a bus, a new flooring for their medical facility, a handicap ramp. And it's actually a process that any nonprofit that is within the guidelines can apply. And they could actually, they have a steering committee. We listen to their needs. We go on site. And so it really is not me picking one nonprofit to say, this is my voice. It's actually picking all of them because really we can help any of them that go through the process the way. And it's really, and so that has been one of the coolest things to see. I'm really excited about, I'm a new member on there. So I'm still learning a lot, but doing the philanthropy days where we get to hear from the different nonprofits. There's not a nonprofit that, I mean, it wasn't just like a certain type. It was like all sorts of nonprofits, and we got to hear their request and then you vote. And it was really neat because the giving day, like when they actually got the stuff and we got to honor them, it was really cool. And it's not just a check. It's actually a tangible thing they need. So it's a really special organization too.
No, I love it. Thank you. We got a few more minutes left here, but one question I wanted to ask you, and I'd like to run this by a lot of people. Is there someone that isn't around anymore that you would have loved to have had a chat with?
Oh yeah.
You can name a few people if you want.
Yeah. I interviewed Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter-in-law this last year, and he is just someone that I would have loved to not only interview, but walk alongside. And I mean, he's a change maker for the day and, and for forever. And so he is definitely someone that I wish I had the opportunity to consider even in my friend circle, because I feel like I probably would have been right alongside him there. I know this is going to sound really funny, but Amelia Earhart too. I think about people that I would have loved to be with them in their journeys and share that with the world. And that's the neat thing, is like getting to help share, like, think about it. She wasn't always Amelia Earhart. Like, someone had to like spread her story. And like my daughter, she's reading all these books of famous women. And one is Coco Chanel. And I know that one, again, it can sound very interesting, but Coco Chanel back in the day was a woman that changed fashion and also threw out corsets and made stylish clothes for women that wanted to dance and not feel all constricted through a corset. And what I love is these women and men with Martin Luther King Jr. weren't always who they are in legacy form. At one point, they were people with a mission. And somehow that story got told. And that's when I look back on history, is I want to be one that's telling the stories of people that are going to be legacy makers, change makers, ones that really propel people to live their best life. And so those are just some people that come to mind.
I love it. Thank you. I love your motto. And just for anybody who's listening to this show today, it totally makes sense. Your motto is, if the door closes, find the darn window.
Yeah, because I think I've already climbed through that window a few times.
Well, no, it's really, it is inspiring to listen to just you know, all the, just the work that you put in and the belief in your dream and all the synchronistic magic that kind of happened behind the scenes just to kind of put it all together. And it's, you know, things are possible, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we can, if we stick with something long enough, we can make things happen. And your story proves that.
Well, and I want to put it out there too, like to the people listening, it wasn't just the show. Like I had very big goals for myself as a future spouse for someone, as a mother, like that was, these were like, if you look at my life, I have things like on the list that I wanted to make sure, like that I knew I wanted for myself. And one of them, like, and I talk about my husband, he was somebody I prayed for. He was someone that I didn't date. As soon as I dated someone that showed me signs of they weren't going to be that person that I knew I wanted to be with, I didn't keep dating them. And I think that like, when I look back on my life, that's why some of this stuff has happened, is I identified what I knew I wanted in life. And obviously things happen differently. Like example, my childhood, like sometimes things happen that throw a complete curveball that you cannot do anything about, mm-hmm. but it's identifying what you truly want in this life and not getting caught in the noise that will catch you up, like where you can't get there as strongly. Cause I truly don't believe I would be where I am as a talk show host and have the joy of hosting if I didn't find the love of my life that supports my dream as well. And same with like motherhood. Now I obviously twins, well, maybe y'all don't know, twins run in my family very strong. My sister had twins too. I have 10 sets. Again, I never said I want to be a twin mom, but I knew I wanted to be a really good mom. And that sparks so much joy. In fact, they have like helped me identify even a stronger lane to get into by being a mom, because I'm like, okay, this next generation is like the generation must be kind. Because, and so that's one of the things that, you know, has kind of made our lane even stronger, is being a mom. So it's not just the host, because so often, you know, when people say who I am, they, you know, it's they lead with the show, and that makes sense. But really, there were several big goals on my sheet of like what I wanted in this life. And I think the combination of all those together has truly made it more beautiful.
Well, that's a message a lot of people should hear. And I commend you for sticking with it and, you know, accruing the self-awareness just to kind of be able to identify what fit and what didn't fit and mm-hmm. kept you on your path. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When people go to your website, I'm going to put all your information in the show notes, but if when they go to whitneyreynolds.com, they can learn about your podcast and your mission statement, your story matters and everything, right?
Yeah. So when you go to whitneyreynolds.com, in fact, if you hear this after March 1, it will have a little bit of a different look. You will see all ways to get involved. First and foremost, it's always the show. We launch 4/4 on PBS stations across the nation. So that's April 4th. Mm. And you can look in your local listing. You can find us again on Tubi. You can find us on the PBS app. And those shows are really amazing. I cannot mm-hmm. wait. I mean, by the time they always hit TV, I'm like, yes. So that is happening. We're also launching something new. This is brand new. So this is actually going to be the first time I've mentioned it, but I'm starting Whitney Reynolds Live Events. It's an experience, and we'll be going to different markets and hosting these events. And it's really a one-on-one behind the scenes look of inspiration and what that looks like in person. So we're going to be launching that the same week that our show launches, and it's going to be completely different than TV. It is the same backbone. The mission's still there mm-hmm. and it's still me. You just get a live experience with us. So that's happening. Also the podcast, if you go, you know, to the menu bar, you can pull down, listen to the podcast, all of our things, no matter what wing of the business it is, it all goes back to inspiration and hope and reminding people that their story matters. So whether you listen to our podcast or you listen to the radio show or, you know, or you're listening here, I want people to walk away knowing their story matters. And all that is on the website. And then all of our videos too, you can see how to get involved. Sign up for our email blast. It's, you know, it's one again that is set to encourage. That's our whole thing mm-hmm. is we want people to that do know our show and decide to watch our show to be inspired and to walk away saying, wow, you know, I feel better after seeing that.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And congratulations with everything. And I, I look forward to seeing what's next and following your path.
Going back to the website thing, if you want to see a real crazy though, look at my real life, go to Instagram, because if you follow my stories, you will see how crazy life is. So Whitney _ Reynolds for sure on that, because that is like my own little reality show and with the click of a finger and a phone.
Well, you're doing it all and it's awesome. And I appreciate you and your friendship. And, you know, also in the show notes, I'm going to put the link to our interview together.
Woo! I can't wait to pull that one. I'll probably learn a lot when I rewatch it.
Yeah. Well, you know what's so funny? Well, I think it was just a couple months before I found out that I had prostate cancer. And so I then went through a whole nother thing that kind of changed me in a lot of good ways. And it was a blessing in disguise. So you caught me at a very interesting time.
Very, very vulnerable and honest time. And, you know, that was one of the things that I remember with your interview is we did get a lot of people that wrote in after you were done, like wanting to know more about you and how they could follow your journey. Cause you too inspire, Brian, you do. Oh,
thank you, Whitney. Thank you very much. And, this has been a pleasure and, you know, and I look forward to staying in touch and seeing all the good that you're going to be doing. Continue doing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson, his latest best-selling book, Habits for Success, and this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. And we love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.